Hi, this is Drinking Wine Talking Tech. I'm Jonathan Reichenthal.
And I'm Tom O'Malley.
Well, we're back.
We are. It feels good to be back. I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a few months,
yeah,
actually.
You've been traveling again.
I've been doing a little bit of travel, just got my head down on my desk, you know, just
working away.
Yeah. I'm napping on my desk,
yeah,
as I do.
Yeah.
And how about you?
You've been busy. I see that in Palo Alto. The streets are all torn up, or have been anyway. Is that coming to an end?
It is coming to an end, finally. The main street down the center of Palo Alto is called University. Yeah. It heads up to Stanford University. And our utilities organization had to replace some of the gas pipes, electrical pipes. We put in some additional conduit. That's the big city projects that you have to do. Doesn't happen so often, but this was ugly.
It was ugly.
So we had to shut down the street, but it's all the streets are now open, and soon we'll resurface.
Yeah.
This is really not that exciting.
It's like the tech Champs-Élysées.
Tell me about you.
I'm more exciting than that.
Yeah.
No, and you know, as our listeners know, I'm a startup guy.
You are
so
still.
I'm always living the drama of startup, whether it's finding investment, finding customers. Constantly on the road lately. We were close to a Series A year ago, and then we balked at it.
Yeah.
And decided to live off of revenues for a bit. We're still doing that.
Yeah.
And it's a process.
Yeah.
And the team is gritty as ever. Customers keep funneling in, so it's all good signs.
Yeah.
But there's always that trade-off of how much of your company do you want to give up,
yeah,
and are you working with the right people, and so. But you also need to move really fast. So
right.
It's about making really big decisions quickly.
Yeah. Now you are absolutely living this Silicon Valley startup adventure.
Oh yeah.
In every respect.
Yes, it's just like the TV show. Unfortunately, it is.
It is. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley, TV show from HBO, right?
What are we talking about today?
I don't know.
What's the game plan?
Well, we always like to talk about like stuff that's happening in the technology ecosystem. Anything anything catch your attention the last few weeks?
The big one for me was definitely Qualtrics.
Qualtrics. Tell me about that.
It's like the B2B SurveyMonkey.
Oh.
Yeah. And what was really interesting about it was SAP bought them. And SAP is sort of like, ERP, right?
Okay.
And sure, some database and the whole stack, and now a huge cloud provider. But why would they buy a survey company? I thought that was really interesting.
It is interesting.
And they paid $8 billion.
Yeah. That's real
money. So that was a bit of a head scratch at first, but then I looked into it, and in my business, I work a lot with consulting companies, Deloitte, EY, Accenture. They're all customers. They use our platform. And so do agencies.
Yes.
Right? So the agencies in New York, BBDO, OMD, J. Walter Thompson, these companies are using our platform. And what I'm seeing is, I'm seeing that traditional research and consulting is having a hard time keeping up with the pace of change, right?
Yeah.
And so people want to get more DIY insights. And Qualtrics is that, so you can launch a survey, you can engage your target market and get real-time insights from them, which if you start thinking about ERP was like a system of record, siloed stuff. Now starting to integrate with outreach, I think is really profound actually.
Yeah, you see this as a big trend.
Yeah,
right?
And I see it impacting companies like I see Salesforce moving into that space,
okay.
I see Workday, right? Now Workday's coming out with a whole suite. And even have traditional players like Deloitte buying digital agencies, digital sensing companies,
mm-hmm,
which is really just research.
Yeah.
And so there's like this middle ground fight that's about to happen all around research and learning. And I think that's entirely cool.
Yeah.
One, because I'm in that space.
Right.
And that should be good for valuations. But also because I think what's happening is I'd love to get your slant on this, but what I'm seeing is that we've sort of maxed out on indexing explicit, meaning if it's written, it's indexed, it's like Dewey Decimal. But it's that explicit information is expiring faster than ever. So it's almost like, and I'm overstating it for the purpose of, to make the point.
Make your point.
We're moving from what I would call the information era. Check this out.
Okay.
because of truth decay.
Oh.
Okay? Because of shelf life decay, we're having to move into the knowledge era.
Yeah.
And what that means is we need to get back to people.
Yes.
It's not about just the ones and zeros anymore. It really is a shift back to people.
We got off to a great start here, but we forgot to tell our listeners where we are.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, and there's some people looking at us.
We're at an event.
Yeah.
We're on stage here in San Francisco.
These people are just on the edge of their seat. I mean, they're holding back their applause.
They are. So we are at the CTO, Chief Technology Officer Summit, in November in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's pouring rain outside.
Yeah.
Which we've welcomed because of some great big fires recently.
That's right.
And we have a terrific audience. And just to prove that there is a live audience, would you mind clapping or saying something? It's real. That is not made up.
That's right.
I didn't dub that like I do usually.
Hit that button again.
That was pent up. People really wanted to be part of it.
That was great.
Yeah, really. By the way, just to get a sense of who's in the room, is anybody here a CTO? Okay, almost half the people, half the 500 people are CTOs. And other technology roles other than CTO?
Chief Product Officer.
Oh, Chief Product Officer, awesome. Non-technology roles. Who else is here? What would you do?
Innovation.
Chief Innovation Officer?
Right.
Sweet, nice. And we'll learn in a few moments the organizations you come from if you're comfortable sharing as well with our audience. Okay, so let's get back to this idea. You said it's all drifting back to people. Is the thesis that the organizations that really know each one of their customers are going to win? This is the thing now?
Yeah, I think it's whoever can keep their, whoever can learn the fastest. And in order to learn the fastest, you have to skip the explicit and you have to go to the tacit.
Right.
And source the knowledge where it exists inside people's heads. So indexing brains is where we're going.
Right.
How about that?
Indexing brains.
Indexing brains. The Google of brains.
Okay. I think I'm going to call this podcast Indexing Brains.
Well, what we need to do is connect this with the theme, because the theme really is about, is it techno-ethics?
Techno-ethics.
Am I pronouncing that right?
You are.
Okay.
You are.
Because I think there is a connection there.
Well, I think part of the connection is the question of privacy as a starting point, right? It sounds like what you're saying is, organizations are accumulating more and more information, more data.
Yeah.
They're knowing stuff about people that we haven't historically derived. And these organizations may know more about us than we know about ourselves, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's possible. Right now, I could go on and pull down something that you've written or said on the web.
Okay.
I can throw that into a... there's several free API personality profilers. I could analyze your personality based on what you've written, read, and share that.
Have you done that?
I actually have. Not with you.
On me?
No, but I've done it with my children. No. I've done it with myself, actually.
What did you learn?
I looked at the output, and I was kind of impressed with it.
Oh.
It's just one layer, but you're right. I think it's not just our personal information, like our, you know, Social Security and credit card, all that's very important. I think that's sort of the static layer of who we are. But there's more dynamic layers and more personal layers, like personality.
Yeah.
I think you can analyze and get predictive about human behavior down to the individual, even with relatively few insights.
Yeah, yeah. And should we be worried about that?
I don't know.
Will organizations behave themselves?
You know, have they ever?
Yeah.
I mean, is this a new problem? Is techno ethics a new problem? Is what I like to try to think about new things as old things. We've always had negative externalities in business decisions. That's not new.
Yeah.
So why do we give it a new name? Why isn't this sustainability or?
Well, you actually, so techno-ethics as an academic discipline has been around a little while, right? And I think a lot of leaders haven't thought of it in those terms. Mm-hmm. But the other day you came up with a really nice way of thinking about, you know, leaders making key decisions around technology that can have very big consequences.
I said that.
On individuals. So this is me setting you up. I got it written down so I can remind you as well.
Thank you.
So I'm just trying to give a kind of a very academic definition of techno-ethics, which is, you know, we can do a lot of things with tech today. Right. And in fact, the technical limitation is not going to be the limitation of the future. It'll be our choices that will be the limitation.
Yeah.
Right. And so you came up with a difference. Do you want me to remind you?
No, okay. I know what it is.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, so negative externalities, right, in decision making has always been part of the game. But the problem is, or the difference is, it took time for them to manifest. So a manager could make a decision and be well out of that job by the time there was a negative impact. But what's happening, what I think makes techno ethics so awesome, because I think there's a good side to this, is that it accelerates, it amplifies the impact, and it does it a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decisions, again, we'll hyperbolize to make the point, but it's arguable that the decisions made by some of the audience members here in the CIO or CISO or innovation suite have more impact, more immediate impact to the firm than, say, the decision that a CEO might be making, and have more ramification. And I think we've seen that, right? There's all sorts of evidence of different decisions that maybe the negative externalities weren't fully explored before that decision was made, and it manifests in a sometimes a very positive way, sometimes in a very negative way.
Yeah.
And so what I'm thinking about it, and here's the point, is that I think of it as finally decisions matter because the outcomes are so immediate and so massive that finally we're not asking people to be ethical. We're asking them to be resilient. And so we can align these two things. I think the friction has always been managers want to make good decisions, but they're incentivized in the longer term or in the shorter term to make results. And when those two things can align because of time and impact.
Yeah.
Am I coming through here? Because
You are. And let me even simplify just a bit, and then
please.
We can build on the simplification.
Yeah. How would you say
Because you went deep, quick. We got to get some basics, right?
It's
good, though. It's come in the morning.
I've had too much
coffee.
Right. Usually I'll have a bottle of wine, and then
it's more gradual, and it kind of eases in.
But polish it up for me.
Polish it. Well, so this is a big topic for all technology communities, but particularly Silicon Valley, right?
Right.
The platforms we're building here have huge reach around the world.
Huge.
You know, a line of code or a condition written into software today impacts people in cities and countries all over the world. Not, as you said earlier, in the past, it would have been months maybe or a couple
quarters,
of years.
Right.
It could be tomorrow that a code change today impacts a software-driven service that is being used in India or China or in Europe. And so why we believe and why technoethics with ethics of technology is suddenly elevated is because the stuff we're playing with here and the stuff we're building and deploying into the world has immediate massive impact and huge scope.
Yeah.
That's new.
And you like to talk about the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why is this topic so important right now? Why why are we talking about it today?
Yeah.
More so
well,
than
well thanks. One of the things I've enjoyed doing in my career is looking at the emergence of new phenomena.
Yeah.
Trying to understand what's driving it, what does it mean to each of us as individuals, to our society, to our businesses. And over the last few years, I've noticed it hasn't been one trend or two trends, but multitude of trends all firing up at once. I mean, trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, even a guy like myself who kind of keeps on top of innovation tech reads a
You're
lot.
You're pretty savvy.
I'm savvy, but I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can only then feel great respect for others who this is not the core of their life, feeling very overwhelmed. And you kind of try to figure out what's going on. And it's now starting to make sense that we are in the beginning phases of a global revolution. And this is not hyperbole.
Right.
I believe that there's now growing evidence that we're entering a new phase, a new type of industrial revolution that's been powered by digitization, by cyber physical systems.
No one can argue. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the speed and reach, you're saying, is just amplifying.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this now creates completely new responsibilities for leaders, right. Actually for everybody.
Yeah, and I guess the thing I'm trying to polish up is, whereas sustainability was always a little bit of a tug at people's do right, you know, you should do the right thing. I think that because speed and reach is there,
right.
The right thing is finally getting aligned to doing the resilient, correct thing for the business. Because to err is just so immediately realized.
It really is. And so this, I wanted to get to a term that you used after a couple of bottles of wine last night that I really liked, which was business resiliency.
Yes.
Because that is a nice, in many ways, technology and business leaders, organization leaders, could probably relate to business resiliency easier than technoethics, which sounds a little bit academic.
Yeah, because ethics, just as a term, I think it's overused and people hide behind it, or stand in front of it. Everybody wants to be considered ethical.
So tell us about business resiliency. I mean,
don't
give us a definition for that.
Don't kill the company.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Make a decision that's actually going to make the business be here tomorrow and be here stronger. I think that aligns to incentives. And so I personally believe that words like sustainability and ethics actually cloud and sometimes even conflict with incentives and organizational structure. Or we're asking people to do something that is on top of their job. I think techno-ethics is so core to the resilience of the business that it's finally doing your job the right way. And so I think there's a, it's actually going to cause, I think span and reach actually causes managers to make better decisions.
Yeah. Now you work with a ton of amazing companies, your partners, your customers, suppliers. What's your assessment? Is business resiliency or techno-ethics on the C-suite agenda? I mean, are you seeing that?
Yes, but not always talked about that way.
Okay.
It's not always in the terms of ethics, but it's usually in the terms of don't kill the company.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to lose their job and be on the cover of the New York Times, and it's really easy to do that, being a CISO or a CIO making a bad decision. So. No pressure, guys.
Yeah. We were talking about, because we're a software-driven world, and these platforms that all these tech communities are building have far reach.
Yeah.
Technologists and technology leaders have enormous power today.
Yeah.
And the power is increasing. Are technologists more powerful than governments?
I'll ask you that, because you're in the government.
Nice.
So what do you
nice punt back.
Wait,
can we go to the script?
I could easily answer it. Yes, I believe so. I think the private sector is that reach and effect and impact into daily lives. I think government's looking really stale and really a noise machine. It doesn't have the levers that actually move our lives like it used to.
Yeah.
I'd say the decisions that companies are making with the apps that we rely on, the services that we consume, the ones that we live with every day impact our lives far more.
Yeah.
But you working for the government, I mean, I may not realize all the services that governments are delivering now that are impacting my life.
So government is in your life whether you want it or not.
I can't get enough.
No one wakes up every day saying, I'm really excited to work, to work with a government service today.
Yeah.
But I will say that there is a pattern emerging where the technology is ahead of where the support systems are ready to work with. I'm talking about things like a new shared service moves into a new city.
Yeah.
And there is no policy, no regulation on that service yet, and it starts running, and then you're sort of catching up with it, right?
And shaping policy around
the
reaction.
And you are. In some cases, it's like stop, as we've seen perhaps with some of the scooters and different new vehicles that are being introduced to San Francisco. It's like they're introduced, there's issues, and then we have to scramble, right? And what I can say to your question, or you, the fact that you asked me back, is I don't see that slowing down. That trend is going to accelerate as the entry barriers to new innovation drop and drop and drop for every one of us.
Yeah.
There's going to be new capabilities rolled out at a much higher speed than we've ever seen.
Please, no more scooters.
So it's not a simple topic, right?
Yeah,
it's not a simple topic. But you're seeing it at the boardroom, but you're saying on the C-suite, but you're saying we're not talking about it in the right language, or maybe not giving it the urgency it needs.
I don't hear people spend. I don't see people spending money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally on techno ethics. I do see. I do see resiliency.
Yeah.
I do see people getting trained and made aware of the impacts of their decisions, but I see it under the banner of don't break the machine.
Don't break it. Hey, before we wrap up here, what do you have any last thoughts?
Not one. No, actually, what are we doing next? Like, where's the show going? Are we? Do we have another live event coming up? Do we have any guests coming on? What do you have planned in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, I'd love to be able to have a good answer to that question.
We're going to wing it, huh?
We wing this for 3 years, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to do more remote stuff, right?
Right.
We used to record this in Palo Alto in an office, but now we're taking it out on the road so we can actually go to where the people are.
Yes.
As opposed to
taking it to the people.
Taking it to the people, as you said, this is all about people.
Yeah, that's right.
As you
and ethics.
And
we're going to ethically take it to the people.
We are. Well, for those listening and those in the room, if you want more information on this podcast, we're on Facebook.
It's huge.
How about that? Facebook.com/drinkingwinetalkingtech. Pretty straightforward. And if you've nothing else, I think it's time for us to wrap.
Let's do it.
Okay. So I'm Jonathan Reichenthal. I've been drinking wine.
And I'm Tom O'Malley, and I've been talking tech.
Good stuff. Thanks very much. Thank you, everybody.